And welcome back to the Pesky Report, episode 331, presented by Beyond the Monster. I'm Jordan Leandri, joined by Tim and Kevin. How you boys doing tonight?
Doing well.
I'm great, man. Couldn't be better. Happy Friday.
Happy Friday for sure. And it is a happy Friday for Red Sox fans. We'll get into that in a moment. But before we do get started, I want to let everybody know to make sure you're following us on all of our platforms, Twitter, Instagram. Also make sure to follow us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, etc. Leave a review, leave a star rating. You hate us, you love us, doesn't matter. Go ahead and do that. Just let us know, give us any feedback you can. That'd be greatly appreciated. But let's get down to brass tacks here. The Red Sox finally make a significant move, and it's a move that's more symbolic than rather a 2024 outlook type of move. They extended Brian Bello. It's a 6-year deal worth $55 million. It can be worth up to 7 years at $76 million if they exercise the club option in 2031. My brain's blanking for a sec, but 7 years, it's up to a 7-year extension, which is just gigantic. It kicks in this year. So his luxury tax hit is 9.1 mil in 2024, but it does lower it over time. So it's not like a gradual arbitration type deal where he's getting raises every single season. It's 9.1 flat for the first 6 years. And then if they accept the club option, it's 21 million in 2031. Well, I'll start with you, Kevin. What were your initial reactions? I mean, there was a lot of smoke when the last episode of this podcast recorded, but there was nothing concrete yet. What were your reactions when you found that?
I mean, just thank God. I mean, something positive to come out of, and I'm not saying that this has been a tough off season. This has been one of the more particular off seasons in recent memory that I felt like I've just been dragged through the mud. And the Bello extension was just kind of like a little bit of hope. And I like what you said, Jordan. To me, it was more symbolic as well. I mean, Bello, in all likelihood, is going to be the first Red Sox pitcher that we've developed since John Lester, right? I think you can make that argument. I think, funny having John Lester down at spring training and also working with Pedro and being in the Bailey lab and really just securing. I'm going to throw it out there. I would give him the nod at opening day at this point and just say, hey, listen, you know what? You got the keys, kid, and let's see what you got. And the future is bright for Bello. I really think that the sky's the limit for him. The money for everyone who's like, we just pretty much bought out our beers. I don't get that argument. I mean, I do get it, but to me, it's more about, you know, locking down your homegrown talent, you know, for the next 6 to 7 years. And I think that's the most important part.
I agree with you there, Tim. How about you?
I feel really good. And kind of like what Kevin said, like we bought out one, possibly two, if they pick up his option of contract years, but like buying out arbitration years is vital if you want to extend a player. Yeah. I feel like, obviously can't confirm, but part of the reason the Mookie deal never happened is because they dicked around with him every time he went to arbitration.
Yeah.
I mean, it was reported by a gentleman that, why I'm blanking on his name, Zach Scott, I think is his name. He was in the Red Sox front office at the time Mookie was going through his arbitration stuff. And he mentioned that they used Chris Bryant as like a, hey, this guy's going to be more valuable than you. So this is the kind of guy that we'd be like, if we were extending you, it'd be based on this guy's contract, which is just insane to me to think about that, especially considering the 2018 season Mookie had was one of the best outfield seasons by a non-Ruth Williams Bonds outfielder century. But that's neither here nor there. We don't need to relitigate the Mookie Betts disaster class that was the Red Sox side of things on that. But yeah, this move, like I said, symbolic. It's like the dawn of a new era. I mean, it's not, and because they already extended Whitlock. They did this before the 2022 season with Whitlock. But Bello marks the second guy they've extended pre-arbitration since 2011. Whitlock being the other one. That's crazy.
That's lunacy.
It's awful that they've only done this twice the last almost last 14 years, but it's nice that they've done it twice in the last few seasons. Like it's starting to. And like Heim did it first with Whitlock, and then now Breslow with Bayo, and hopefully Casas eventually, probably not before the season started, if I had to guess. But it's nice to see the Red Sox, whether they were behind the eight ball or not, starting to finally not screw around with their guys. Just go ahead, buy out their arb years. Not having to go to arbitration hearings is just a gigantic thing. Like, you can't stress that enough. You look at what happened with Corbin Burnes in Milwaukee. Like, dude won Cy Young in 2021, and then after the 2022 season, they basically blamed him in the arbitration hearing for why they missed the playoffs, and then Burnes is like, fuck this, I'm out of here. I don't want to be here anymore. And then now he's a Baltimore Oriole. So it's great for the Red Sox that they got this
one. I think it's fantastic, and like you said, arbitration can just get so messy. You know, it can get so messy. It brings out really the negotiation part of it, really brings out the ugliness of the business of baseball. You know, so to get Bayo and to have him locked up is key, and also showing faith in that young talent, right? That young talent, you know, all we hear about is these young guys, and hopefully in the near future, we're going to see some more young guys in the next 1, 2, 3 years are going to be coming up. You know, as these young guys are kind of coming through the pipeline, hopefully this becomes a trend with the Sox, where very similar to I would say Atlanta, right? Atlanta has like a majority of their core locked up through like 2028, I think it is. You know, I could be wrong on that, but
making federal minimum wage.
Yeah. Like it's absurd. It's absolutely absurd what the Braves have been able to do down in Atlanta. But you know, if half of these guys down in the minors that we have turn out to be anything worthwhile, then it's you know, to me, it's a win.
Yeah, can we talk about those Braves deals real quick? Because how is Ozzie Albies making $5 million a year?
And, like, doesn't care. Like, just doesn't give a shit, dude. Like, it makes no sense to me.
Isn't Acuna really only making, like, $11 million a year, too? And, like, Strider's making, like, $9 million a year. Like,
I want to look some of these up. Yeah, it's absurd.
Because Albies signed for 7 years at $35
million. Yeah. Crazy.
7 years at 35 million. That's unreal. This is crazy. Yeah.
Alex Anthopoulos Island is a real thing. Like, that shit is real.
Did you guys see 100% Scooby Doo 1? The Voodoo Island? That's what Alex Anthopoulos owns.
That's true.
It's actually based on a true story. Who knew all along?
Along it was the Atlanta Braves.
As sketchy as, you know, a lot of the deals that we see the Braves shell out tend to look, though, like, they are the pinnacle of these pre-arbitration contracts. And if the Red Sox can start getting there, I'm not saying that they, like, it's, I mean, it's better for the organization, obviously, to rip off its talent. Yeah. And I'm not, but I mean, like, in the case of Bayo, I think they're giving him more money than he would earn over these next few years. And I know towards the end of his arbitration, like I said, it's 9.1 is his CBT hit as we each year for the first 6 years of, or for the 6 years, his extension's guaranteed. But he would not be earning $55 million over the next 6 years. Like it's definitely a pay raise, and especially right away. Cause he would have signed for the league minimum, which I think is 750K. So, but
we also are seeing a trend in pitchers. Like, you don't know what's going to happen. And I think, you know, a 9.1 hit on Bayo, and I'm not, the likelihood, I don't even want to put it into the universe. You know where I'm going with it. The injury bug, how it hits, when it hits. You know, I think this is a fair deal. I'm not saying that we're ripping off Bayo by any means. I don't think that's the case. However, you know, you never know what pitchers.
Well, I was talking about ripping people off. I was referring to the Braves. I think this is a fair deal for both sides. I think Bayo's getting more money than he would have over the course of the next six seasons. That seventh year is really where he gets ripped off, and that's only if he's an all-star, because then he would get $30 million that seventh year as opposed to 21. But and but they could always also rework that deal towards the end and extend him again, which hopefully they do, if assuming he is the pitcher that we all think he's capable of being. Casas is the next one, but I don't want to focus on what they haven't done yet. It's nice to be able to focus on something they have done and be happy about it. It's great. And I'm with you. He should start opening day. Like, I understand, like, Cora did this last year with Corey Kluber over Sale, and it's like a weird seniority thing. Like, Pivetta is the longest tenured Red Sox in the rotation, which is also insane to think about. Wait, no, he isn't, because I think Houck was slightly before him. But regardless, Pivetta is the adult in the room, so to speak, especially now that Giolito is we'll talk about that in a sec with Giolito, but it's Bayo's rotation now. Unless you go out and you make a splash signing or a trade in the next couple of days or next week or so, Bayo's your ace. He should be treated as such. Give him opening day and get the kind of the ball rolling on what is going to be a bridge year and give us something to be excited about. 30 starts of Bayo as the ace. Let's see what that looks like. Let's get excited about what it'll look like in 2025. Let's see if he can handle it. Maybe he can't, and you have to go out and get a guy who's a proven number one in the offseason. But we won't know it until we see it. And if Pivetta is the opening day starter, that's already like not you're already not, you know, passing the keys to Bayo, who I don't think gives a shit. But it's the optics of it for me.
Yeah, I agree. The optics are give it to him opening day. Give us the full year, 30 starts at the front end of the rotation, and I think you're going to find out a lot. I really do. I think you're going to find out a lot of what we have in Bayo going forward. And also, he's a guy who, just from the optics, looks like he loves the big moment. Like, I always go back to that Sunday Night Baseball start where he was just mowing down the Yankees last season, and you saw the energy, right? Like, and it could just be that he's youthful and this and that, but I think he wants that moment. I think he wants to be the guy that takes the ball, you know, as the ace on the mound, every fifth day.
I mean, it's kind of fitting for like his story with like almost signing with the Phillies and then the arm issue and the Red Sox get him super cheap. He comes to the organization with like his favorite young pitcher or his favorite pitcher when he was young pitched for. It's just like it's a fairy tale story in baseball, and you have a lot of those, and his is just special. And I think he really does want to be that guy. And you can tell the way he works in the offseason, the emotion he shows when he has a good outing, the emotion he shows when he has a bad outing. He wants to be that guy. And he wants to be the guy the Red Sox rely on, where every fifth day you're going, we're going to win this game.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, Pedro himself said that when he watches him, he sees himself as like his young version of himself. And I think that's a sparkling endorsement of a young pitcher. A lot of pressure that comes with it, but like Kevin said, and like you said, Tim, like he seizes that, like he wants that. He wants that pressure. He wants the smoke. He wants to go out and prove that he could be that guy. And now that their expectations are there, I think he wants to be that guy even more. Not to say that he didn't want it beforehand, but now that the expectations are there, I think he's even more motivated to go out and be like, yeah, I'm that dude. Like I'll fuck around and be the best pitcher on the staff, and have it not be like a matter of circumstance where the whole team sucks and he's just the lipstick on a pig. He's actually like a good pitcher, and the rotation is good behind him too.
And it's been a little while.
My bad, Kev.
No, go ahead.
In the wise words of an AL East rival, pressure creates diamonds.
Pressure in pressure, you only put pressure in tires or something like that.
Noah. Fucking mess of a human being that guy is. Oh my god. I was just saying, it's been a little while since we've had that consistent every fifth day, we're gonna win this game. And I think we're kind of yearning for that, like where I think probably 18 would sell. Right. I mean,
yeah.
You know, 18 with Sale would probably be the last time where I felt confident every fifth day, this guy's going to take the mound and we're going to win. And that's just how it goes.
It got to that point, I think, in 21 with the Eovaldi, but I felt like for most of the season, we were like, when's he going to get hurt? So it was like we knew that the pitcher was good enough to win the game every fifth day, but was he going to be there every fifth day? Which is something that we also come to learn about Sale in 2018, but he was
y'all are some haters, man.
Who we hating on?
Rich Hill erasure is crazy.
2015. Now we have to go back to 2015 where Rich Hill took the ball and I knew it was an automatic win.
Oh my god. Yeah.
Rich Hill on the road in 2022 is pretty good.
2022 yeah, Corey Kluber erasure too.
Oh my god.
But I'm booting you from the room. any last thoughts on the Bayo extension? I know that they are in the Dominican Republic for this little series, quote unquote, exhibition series with the Rays. Bayo's not pitching in that. It's Cutter Crawford's going Saturday, Garrett Whitlock on Sunday. But any last thoughts on Bayo before we get to somebody else in the rotation and we start talking about some bad stuff because it's the Red Sox. We can only have so much good stuff.
No, I think we're good on that.
Tim, you got any last thoughts on Bayo?
Great extension.
Agreed. A man of so many words. We love it. So moving on to some not so great news in the rotation, and they talked and you know we talked about this again. Not we. Another. I got to figure out how to word that better. But when this show recorded the last episode, talked about Giolito being reportedly done for the season, partial tear in his UCL, which is crazy because he, you know, has never been hurt before. So
yeah,
only fitting that it happens here. But he's reportedly getting a second opinion on Monday. And he's going to the doctor that ended up performing the Tommy John surgery on Garrett Whitlock back when he was with the Yankees. It sucks, man. Like, this is the one guy that they actually paid in the offseason, you know, and they brought him in because, you know, they liked what they saw from him in the first half last season. He bought in, and I think that's unquestionable that he bought in, and he was already starting to implement some of the things they talked to him about while they were recruiting him to Boston. And he's a great dude, and he's an easy guy to root for, and it sucks that he is going to be – it seems like best case scenario, like 2017 David Price, where he's got the magical elbow and he ends up making like, you know, like a handful of appearances, like 50 innings. And then maybe if you are lucky enough to make it to the postseason, you know, comes out of the bullpen for you then. I guess I'll give my initial thoughts on this first. It sucks. 20 mil or 19 mil down the drain. The silver lining, and I use that term loosely because his last two seasons, his ERA was almost 5. Like there's almost no shot that he doesn't opt in, you know, for 2025. So for me, I think it sucks, but you'll have him for 2025. This year seemed already, even with Giolito, to be a year that they were going to, you know, maybe softly contend for the wild card spot, for the last wild card spot. So now you have him in the rotation for 2025. And maybe best case scenario, he does end up pitching this year and you at least get a taste of what he could be in 2025. Tim, what were your thoughts on the Giolito or reactions to the Giolito stuff?
Well, like at first, I just was like, we're cursed. I really think we might. I genuinely think we might be, but I'm not trying to be gloom and doom, get all emotional on here. It sucks, but like at least you know you didn't just like give him a year to rehab. And you don't have him next year, he'll pitch somewhere else. Like, you have him next year if he opts in, which most likely will, coming off TJS. So, I mean, I'm obviously feel bad for him, but the situation could have somehow been even worse.
For sure. Kev, how about you? What do you think?
Yeah, it sucks. And, you know, as Tim said, the injury bug that just keeps on biting. And listen, the thing about Lucas was I thought he was going to be the innings eater, right? He was going to be the guy that was going to come in and he was going to eat you innings in the rotation, in a rotation that we didn't know exactly, what 4 and 5 were going to look like, right? With Lucas. So it also stinks because I don't want to sit here and admit that, if I was depending my season on Lucas Giolito, right, like I'm probably already behind the eight ball, right? So for me to say that this injury stinks, that he's probably going to opt in next year, you know, we'll see what happens with the second opinion. You know, maybe he does get some, some tossing going on at the end of the season. I don't know. I don't know what that looks like. But the other thing is that it's kind of like salt in the wound where it's like, man, we were relying on this guy, and he had a 5 ERA. And let you like, I don't want to, I'm not trying to kick him while he's down, but it speaks volumes to the rotation of just, you know, where are we at right now, and what are we doing, and is this the bridge year? And if it is, that's okay, yeah. And that's fine, and we'll make it work, and I'm sure as fans will push through. But yeah, it's just kind of salt in the wound when it's like, you know, when a guy like Lucas Giolito goes down, sorry, I always fumble over his last name, when he goes down and you're like, oh man, the season's done. And it's like, what are we talking about here? Yeah. You know, performance wise, you know, I mean, yeah, I get the, you know, eating innings and things like that. And also I was another guy, I was like totally stoked to see him working with Bailey. And I'm going to, you know, keep using the Bailey Lab reference, but he was another guy that, you know, it would have been interesting to see what a full off season and spring training and what a season would have looked like for him.
Yeah, agreed with you there. I think there's two schools of thought when it comes to where Giolito fit into this rotation. If this rotation was going to be a good one and the Red Sox were going to compete for a playoff spot, there's Giolito turned to vintage Giolito. They figured something out, mm-hmm. mechanical tweaks, whatever that might be, pitch usage tweaks. And he ends up being an ace, or the likelier option, he's a stable back end of the rotation starter while guys like Bayo emerge as a potential all-star, you know, at the front end. Cutter Crawford takes another leap forward. Tanner Houck is a stable guy out of the back end as well. And then Nick Pivetta, you know, the success he had in the second half is real. And I feel like we've been doing this with Pivetta every year. There's more hype around it and more like foundation to it this year, but like the likelier option for me was the latter, that there were going to be guys that were just so good that he could be the four and you'd be fine as long as he wasn't, you know, getting shelled and only going three or four innings, which is what he was doing after he left the White Sox last year. For me, the big thing and the reason I wanted to talk about this was because I think there's a lesson to be learned about the kind of contract they gave to Giolito. Like this guy, again, ERA over of almost five the past two seasons. And his like one calling card, I mean, obviously if he had a good first half last year and he really bottomed out in the second half, his calling card and the reason why he was such a good signing at the time was this dude always eats up innings. For me, you know, what good are innings if your ERA is almost five and you give up 40 home runs? Again, Giolito, great dude, was rooting for his success, was starting to buy into the idea of him being a very good pitcher for this team. But, you know, you're doling out almost 40 mil to a guy that his one trade is innings. And then you're only a rubber arm until you're not anymore. Like you're one injury away from it being
horrible.
And, you know, paying a guy specifically, especially 20 mil for innings, that was the big thing for me that I didn't love about the contract and the signing from Jump Street. And he could have been great. And I would have eaten my words and I would have happily done so because I want this team to be great. But for me, like paying a guy specifically for innings is too risky. And that's a lesson that I think they can learn. And again, I'm not trying to kick the guy while he's down, and he may have been great for them this year and he may be great for them next season. But again, paying a guy who's one thing was innings. That was the one green flag coming into the season. Innings, and he doesn't get hurt. It's too risky for me. And that's something that they hopefully will reflect on next offseason when they get back into the boardroom and decide who they want to add to the rotation, if they even want to add to the rotation, because we saw this year there was not a ton of motivation to do so.
No motivation.
Yeah, they look a little bit more, look to a little bit more than just the guy's ability to eat innings and log 30 starts, because that's so unpredictable year to year. You know, everyone's an injury away. Like your one ball comes out of your hand weird away from, you know, missing an entire season.
Figure the guy who was paid. No. I mean, listen, go figure the guy who we gave $20 million a year because his sole purpose was to eat innings. Like, isn't that a little foreshadowing? You know what I mean? Like we're going to throw money at this guy because he's an innings eater. And we saw what happened in the second half with him last year. And it was like, was something tweaked all along. I'm not saying that it was. It just wasn't. It's not sustainable. You know, the day and age of throwing 200 innings, you know, a season, you know, for 6, 7, 8, 9 consecutive years. I just don't know if we're going to see much of that anymore. I really don't. Between the UCL tears, the Tommy John, all of it, like there's just guys are throwing the ball. They're throwing it harder. They're throwing it with more movement. They're throwing it. And I'm not saying it's a mechanical thing. I don't know. I'm not that educated in how that all works. But you can't tell me that there's not a correlation between the injuries and how these guys are just – like if someone would have just told Jacob deGrom, hey, listen, you'll be just as good, just throw like 2 miles per hour slower, the guy probably doesn't get hurt that often. You know what I mean? Like it's like you don't have to pump 102 every single time you're on the mound. And, yeah, I don't know. I'm not saying Lucas is, but I went off on a tangent there.
Tell it to San Diego Studios too. I'm tired of facing Jacob deGrom throwing 103 in the seventh inning. Please, I'm begging you.
Like it just like no one ever thought to go up to Jacob and be like, "Hey, dude, like if you're still great at 98, like you're still a really good fucking pitcher at 97, 98, you don't have to throw 101, 102, you know, for you know 90 plus pitches a game." I don't know.
I hear you. The stuff is like I've made the point that while every era has its, you know, cream of the crop pitchers that are like all time great, this era, like your 4 and 5 starters are just so much better than the 4s and 5s of like even, you know, 2005, like as recently as then. It comes with that risk. Like there's a lot of guys now that get hurt. And like the one guy that I always thought would be a lock to give you 200 innings a year was like Sandy Alcantara. And guess what? He just got Tommy John surgery at the end of last season.
He just got Tommy John.
But that's, you know, it's where we're at as a sport, and it sucks for the players. But it also speaks volumes to the depths of these organizations that they're able to somehow keep spawning these guys that are just, you know, freaks. Tim, you have anything left on Giolito?
No, I think that's about it. But like, kind of like what Kevin was saying about like the velocity and stuff, it's like that, but it's also like the way you have to move your arm to throw like the splitter or like a circle change or the slider. Cause I was listening to a podcast about this the other day. Cause like, I like indulging and stuff to figure out like why athletes get hurt and stuff. And they had like a doctor on there, and he was saying like your arm movement for a splitter or like a sweeper is not normal. Like you do that too many times, and exactly what's happening to all these pitchers is going to happen. And yes, it might make you a better pitcher, but at some point, like you do got to think about the career longevity that you want.
Yeah, for sure. And the motion that these guys make, like throwing a baseball is already an unnatural movement. It's like there's a lot of injury risk in just simply throwing the ball. Like there's so much wear and tear on the shoulder that, you know, adding things like that also now mess with your elbow and like, you know, the teres major strains that we've been seeing guys start like creeping up over the last few years. I know Kodai Senga just got hit with that and at the start of camp, you know, Corey Kluber, his career basically really started to free fall when he had that injury with the Rangers in 2020. So it's like that stuff's starting to creep up. And I know at that point, Kluber wasn't like, you know, a spin god that threw 98, but like, you know, it's starting to creep back up and become a more common injury, similar to how Tommy John surgery was starting to become more common, you know, back in the 80s. Like it crept up and now it's something that's like, we're just waiting for these guys to get hurt at this point. And some of them somehow don't, some of them do. And, you know, unfortunately for the Red Sox, it feels like every dude that they bring in, you know, finds himself on the shelf. That's just why I'm such a big bang for your buck kind of guy. Like all these guys are injury risks now because of the way they throw, how they, you know, their pitch arsenals. Go get the guys with the best stuff and then, you know, get depth so you can sustain injuries. Mm. Which also, you know, adds an emphasis to what they need to do down the farm system, which they're starting to take the steps towards doing, but it speaks volumes. So don't go out and get guys because that they're, 190 inning locks.
Yeah.
Because, you know, here we are. Oh my gosh. Anyway, moving on to hopefully the last time we have to talk about this, because John Heyman brought it up, because this man just loves to implicate the Red Sox and things and talk about the Red Sox. I feel like Will Smith with Jada Pinkett at the Oscars.
Hey, yo, keep my wife's name out your fucking mouth.
Yeah.
That's what
he blocked me, by the way.
Will Smith blocked you, or John Heyman?
No, John Heyman blocked me.
Shouldn't have talked about John Jada, Heyman, man.
Straight up blocked me, dude. That's like, I was insane. Sitting on the couch. I retweeted something. I don't know. He said something stupid, and I made a sideways comment at him. And next thing I knew, it was, yep, blocked, gone. I was like, I've seen people say way worse, way fucking worse about you, dude.
Soft.
Yeah, he was soft.
That's crazy. But today he brought up, today being Friday, he brought up that the Red Sox offer to Yoshinobu Yamamoto was close to 300 mil and they would have gone higher. That was Heyman, right? Why am I now sort of second guess that was Heyman?
Yeah, it was Heyman.
That was Heyman. Yeah, that was Heyman. And so my thought process on this, and I said this when we were talking about, or when I brought up that I wanted to talk about this tonight, my thought process on this is I don't fucking care anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I don't. I'm done with it. Like, we had the report, you know, depending on what your view is on the Seguimos Positivo EOK, you know, bandwagon, you know, there was reports that they went over 300 mil. There was reports that their offer was 300 mil. And now we have close to 300 mil, which I want to also reiterate, close to doesn't mean that it didn't exceed. It's weird verbiage, but like 305 mil is close to 300 mil and they would have gone higher. And like, in my thought process is, why the fuck did your A offer not come out also? Like, why could it have gotten higher? Why didn't it go higher? Why didn't you give him your best offer? And then if he doesn't take it, be like, hey, we put in our best offer. What could have gone higher? It just sucks. Like, I'm done talking about it. I don't give a shit anymore. I just had some pent up aggression, I think, about the situation. And that
yeah,
you know,
get
the
it
Heyman
out.
Report, the
I,
Heyman
I,
report.
I don't know. I don't know about you, but definitely sounds like a guy who still cares about it.
Shut up, dude. It's just, I'm just at the point where I'm like, you know, it sucks because just give the guy your A+ offer. And if he doesn't take it, then you can at least be like, hey, we tried, and then leak it to the media. Yeah. Like they were so willing to do with Shota Imanaga when he signed with the Cubs. Second, like I just close to 300 mil doesn't really tell me anything other than they were in the same ballpark as a lot of the other teams that were there. But again, like, just make your A offer, your A+ offer. Like, why are we being cute? We're like the Fenway experience. Like, you think the fucking Heinz ketchup is going to be the reason Yoshinobu Yamamoto takes less to come to Boston? Like, shut the fuck up, man. Like, give him your A+ offer. Like,
I'm with you. I think you have a guy of that talent, and if you're even in the conversations, you got to give the A+ effort. You know, you have to give the A offer. You have to. And the other thing that kind of pisses me off is it continues the narrative of what are the Red Sox, what is FSG willing to spend, right? So we're kind of on this, like, are we bargain bin? Are we running as a mid market, as a small market? Are we not spending money? Or, you know, it was Heim Bloom, was he handcuffed? Is now Craig Breslow walking into another situation where he's going to be handcuffed when it comes to the finances? And we're kind of just now pounding that narrative that, you know, well, we got Rafi extended and that was a lot of money, you know, and now we got Yamamoto and it's another down the line freaking article headline that catches you where it's like, are they willing to spend? Like, are they? To me, as long as we keep talking about it until they actually do it, and like I said, they extended Rafi, and that's fantastic, and it was a boatload of money. But until we see it in the free agent market of them really saying, hey, listen, we're opening up the checkbook, you had two guys you could have done it for. Ohtani and Yamamoto both could have landed, you know, in Boston. Yes, that's a pipe dream, and I understand that. But we now have these, like I said, they're down the creek kind of headlines and articles that come out. Oh, well, we would have spent money. Would you? Did you? Why didn't you? So it's a little frustrating.
Sounds like they gave him an offer they knew he wouldn't accept, and they were like, hey, but look, we were willing to go. We were willing to get close.
We were willing.
It just got to a point where we were not comfortable going, even though, but like, it's so easy to be like, yeah, would have gotten higher. Well, then why didn't it?
Yes.
Like at that point, you're throwing the player under the bus, and it's like, he didn't come back to us with what the Dodgers got, which he doesn't have to do. If you it was pretty clear the Dodgers were going to go literally go full throttle towards Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Your offer should have been in the ballpark. If you were willing to go there, then why are we pinching pennies over 30 mil? Like, were you willing to go to 325? Why didn't he know that?
Yes. Were you willing to go to 340?
Yeah.
I mean, seriously, like, what are we talking about here? Like, I don't know. It's just going to keep the narrative. It's just going to keep the narrative of, well, we are going to spend, right? The same Kennedy bullshit that he feeds us of, no, we care about this baseball team. We do care about this baseball team. Or the John Henry, it's expensive to get baseball players. Yeah, we fucking know that, dude. We fucking know it. We're living through it.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm dropping a lot of...
Kevin, you're a liar. They care.
They care.
Yeah, they care. Yeah, yeah. Fuck me, man.
Should have sucked. I'm going to call you out on it because it's bullshit. Fucking Sam Kennedy, man.
Yeah, it's unbelievable.
I just wanted to get in my feels for a moment. I know. I sprung it up on you guys that I wanted to talk about it. And Kevin, you just went. Tim, do you have anything left on Yamamoto, or do you genuinely not care? Unlike me, who my version of not caring is still crying about it.
I genuinely don't give a fuck. I hope he wins Rookie of the Year in the NL.
There you go.
It would be nice. I'm
World Series, so everyone can go piss their pants and cry.
Super team.
Tim's the best.
Piss their pants and cry. That should be the new title of this episode.
I love
piss your pants and cry. That's gonna be a cry. overriding the even though we got the graphic already for the episode, we're changing the title. So we'll wrap things up here. We're gonna keep it pretty short because again, we just had an episode drop a couple days ago. Have a little bit of fun with this, you know, because we're still living in the land of Scott Boras's clients as free agents, just not getting signed, not getting the offers that they think that they're deserving, or maybe it's just all delusion. But you know, we're gonna go around in a circle here. I haven't decided what order we're going in.
This is actually a triangle.
Just this is a triangle. That is true. That is true. It's a triangle. this is a triangle. Jordan Learns Shapes is going to be the next segment we do. How many sides?
Triangle.
How many sides are in a hexagon, Jordan? But we're going to go around here.
Six.
Hexagon. Yeah, it is six.
It is.
I had to think about it for a second.
You nailed it.
I had to think about it for a second.
You fucking nailed it.
Had to think about it for a sec. It's been a while, dude. I went to Emerson and ASU, bro. We didn't do an ounce of math. We didn't do an iota of a math problem while I was there. Anyway, so we're going to go around here. We're going to predict where Jordan Montgomery ends up, Blake Snell, and then old friend alert, JD Martinez. Do we want to start with Monty or do we want to start with JD? Because I feel like we've beaten the horse to death when it comes to Monty. I'm kind of just done shaking ass for the guy.
Let's do Monty last.
Yeah, we'll do Monty last.
All right, word. So we'll start with Blake Snell. So we'll get JD right in the middle there. Like he tends to fit in with lineups. We'll have him hitting right in the middle. So we'll start with Blake Snell, and I'll start with you, Tim. Where do you think Blake Snell is going to end up?
Philadelphia Phillies.
Any reasoning behind that? I know they were in on Monty for a bit.
Dave Dombrowski, notoriously not a great drafter. I can't really think of anyone right now outside of Casas. He does not give a flying fuck, about spending any type of money. You guys seen The Dark Knight, right? He's literally the Joker in The Dark Knight.
Yeah, he is.
So yeah, 2 years, 40 million. 40 a year. So 80.
Oh, 40 a year. I was going to say 40 mil. The Red Sox don't go there. They were willing to do that with Giolito.
No. 40 AAV.
40 AAV.
40 AAV. I like it.
What do you think, Kev?
I'm going with the Yankees. I don't think the Yankees are done. I think the Yankees, they get a hold. And right now, I think Cashman, who's dealt with Boris a lot, they're just having a staring contest. That's all they're doing. And I think eventually the Yankees are gonna land another arm because, my God, outside of, their rotation looks fucking dicey. I know it's early in March, but Rodon getting shelled every time he takes the mound is not a good sign. And I think they're gonna press the panic button because I think the window. So does a rental.
Talk about going from a deal that you regret with Carlos Rodon to signing a guy like Snell, who is so volatile year to year because all he does is walk the ball.
It's so Yankees. You know, I'm telling you, all it takes is one more rough outing out of anyone in that starting five that they have right now on that mound. And I think Cashman blinks. I really do. I think he blinks and he says, okay, what does he want? Let's go.
Yeah, even if it's for 1 year. I was thinking about the Yankees when I suggested we do this last night. I was thinking Yankees for Blake Snell. And, you know, with him, it's like there's the draft pick attached to it because of the qualifying offer that he would receive in San Diego. That and the Yankees are going to be paying like 50% more for every dollar that they give him because they're so far over the tax. So a $40 million, just use Tim's deal with the Phillies as reference, they'd be paying him $60 million a year, or he'd count for $60 million a year against the luxury tax. And that's crazy considering they, you know, still have to extend Juan Soto. I think I'm turning the tide here a bit. There was so much smoke about Jordan Montgomery going to the Cubs. I think that's where Snell is going to end up. That team, I know that they brought in kind of a wild card in Imanaga, and Snell is another one. I think stuff-wise, Snell was just better, even though the draft pick is attached, and I think the Cubs are trying to go more towards the long-term sustainable winner thing. I think that they're a much better developer or organizational – they're much better at developing talent than they get credit for, especially pitching. I think Snell there would be great. That's my pick. I think he's going to go to the Cubs. And I think, again, we're in the same boat here. 2 years, 40 mil a year, I think makes a lot of sense for him. Give him that Max Scherzer, Justin Verlander, Zach Wheeler extension type of contract. I think that makes a lot of sense for them. So we'll now shift to JD Martinez, and we'll kind of serpentine this, I guess, for this. So I'll go. Maybe not. So we don't go in similar orders every single time. I'll go first, and then we'll go to Tim. JD Martinez for me, I hate the fact that this report came out today because I was like, oh, JD to Miami makes a lot of sense. And Tim and I talked about this for a minute before we started recording as well. I think Miami makes a ton of sense for him. He's a chance to go back home. Chance to go back home, go be the adult in the room of a young team that's exciting, made the playoffs last season, and just gets to go down there and mash. There's no pressure on him to go play the field. You know, Jorge Soler is gone. He's out in San Francisco now, which is crazy because they wanted JD initially, and he was like, hell no, I don't want to play there. I think Miami makes a ton of sense for him, you know, kind of. And then if they stink, you know, I'm sure he'll have a fairly solid season, even if he's not hitting for pop, which I think the power will suffer a bit in Miami because, you know, he goes to right center and left center so much in those places. That's deep in Miami. But a contender will take a shot at him if the Marlins aren't winning. Tim, where do you think JD's going?
Pass?
You're thinking of another team?
I literally just pulled up my phone because I had the Marlins and I wasn't on with you guys before this because I'm going JD. He's a Florida guy, right? He is a Florida guy. So I thought for all the same reasons, I'm not going to reiterate. Jordan said young team, exciting team, could be what playoff team. If I had to go maybe Mets, I don't know. Who needs a DH? Who needs a DH? Mets could use a DH, right?
It's tough because I think a lot of teams are starting to go that route of not having a set DH unless you have Otani or, you know, like even the Astros don't have Yordan in the DH spot every day. So it, like, it's tough. It's tough to pick a team that, that makes sense for JD because he cannot play the field anymore.
So. No, and the only place that I can think of off the top of my head, because I was going to go start rattling through depth charts, I thought NL East team, so Marlins, Mets, maybe, I don't know.
I feel like an asshole because Tim actually mentioned the Marlins before I said anything when we were before we started recording. But I genuinely, had Miami as my pick for him.
Makes so much sense.
I'll let Tim go, and I'll throw out my sneaky dark horse that just came to my mind after he goes.
Yeah, since Jordan wants to be a little touch hole, my new team is the Cincinnati Reds.
Ooh, that's fascinating. Ooh, okay. I mean, it's a you know, Marte just got popped for PEDs, so
yeah,
you know, and it's a, you know, 80 games. It's a possible buy and sell situation. You trade JD at the deadline and bring back Marte.
Spencer Steer goes plays third with Marte out. You put Encarnacion Strand at first, and JD DHs.
Well, what about Candelario?
Oh, I forgot they fucking signed him.
That's such an underrated
signing by them.
Yeah,
that is a hitter's park. He's gonna fucking mash there.
Yeah, he's gonna be a diamond in MLB The Show before the end of May. Unless if he was on the Red Sox, he would still be rocking a 74. You know, when we get to fucking August, like Chris Martin was, but. Yeah, that's a good ballpark for him. It's really tough to find a spot for JD. Like, it really is.
Yeah, I'm still gonna say Cincinnati.
Fuck it, they'll make it work. So my sneaky dark horse for him that just came to my mind, still Florida, Rays maybe.
Rays.
I don't know what their DH situation looks like. That just popped into my head. I'm like, there's another team in Florida that, like,
they don't DH though. That's a rotation.
They don't, but JD historically mashes there.
Yeah.
What about the Angels?
Angels have been in his market all off season. So I feel like if the Angels were serious players, JD would already be signed there because he doesn't strike me. I know in 2018 he held out, you know, until like the beginning of camp, but he still signed before March 8th, 2018. So I think he's starting to sweat a little bit. He wants to know where he's playing. Thankfully for him, he's a DH, so all he has to do is just swing the damn bat and get his timing down, and he'll be fine. Last but not least, the man that I am, like, again, this is gonna be so wrong because I said this about Yamamoto, but I'm just done talking about him. I'm done shaking ass for Jordan Montgomery. I don't even think it's worth it for the Red Sox to sign him anymore. That's a little bit of copium. Just a little bit. I'm shameless, dude.
Internally still shaking ass for Jordan Montgomery.
Hey, I'm not shaking ass for him because I'm not talking about him as a pitcher. All I'm saying is I don't think it makes sense for the Red Sox anymore. I'll start with you, Kevin, because you are the one that hasn't let off yet. Where do you think Monty's going?
I think Monty, I'm going to steal Tim's team from earlier. I think he's going to be a Philly. I think Dombrowski is going to get to a point where it's not going to be a Snell situation. I think he's going to bite on Monty with years. I think Dombrowski is a guy who says, F you, give me the checkbook, and I bring you to a World Series. And they need another arm. And I think, I think he would actually probably do really well with the Phillies. And I think he probably gets his fifth year, if not a sixth, depending on Dombrowski's move. You have no idea. I mean, we could wake up tomorrow and he could be getting 25 a year for fucking 7 years from the Phillies.
Yeah. He ends up getting the contract that he wanted. From the outset of the offseason, which was the Nola deal.
Or
the
but on not. March, tomorrow will be March 9th.
Yeah.
It's insane. It's absolutely insane.
Tim, where you got Monty going? Bad timing. I saw you just take a swig while I called on you.
The Savannah Bananas.
I don't know, man. You think they're willing to go 7 years for him?
Yeah. No, but honestly, Chicago Cubs.
Cubs. Yeah, that was my second team.
I like where our head's at. We're all kind of in the same realm.
Yeah. Cubs make a lot of sense.
Yeah, I mean, Council basically was like, hey, I thought you were bringing Monty too. And yeah. Boris went there with Bellinger. So, yeah. You know, hey, there's a working rapport for the offseason, which seems to change year to year on whatever. For me, I mean, this report that came out that Monty would prefer a smaller market, which I think is him shaking ass for the Red Sox a little bit. He's like, hey, I'll come play for you because you want to act like a small market team. But the two teams that were brought up were like Texas and St. Louis. Well, Texas has already kind of put the wet blanket over that fire. And Chris Young said that that's not going to happen. It's unlikely to happen. I think he goes back to St. Louis. He had success there. Sonny Gray is potentially going to miss the start of the season with an injury. That rotation is a two-pack of ass. Like, it is not a good rotation. They scrambled at the start of the offseason to fill out a rotation of mid. Like, talk about the Red Sox banking on Lucas Giolito kind of turning back the clock. They're doing that with Lance Lynn. Lance Lynn was garbage last year. He was another guy who used to be a workhorse and was underrated for a while. But last year, he was terrible. He's been hurt the last couple of years. You know, Miles Michaelis, like, are we really getting hyped over Miles Michaelis or Kyle Gibson? Like, gross.
Bitch.
Just disgusting. It's just a gross rotation. And I think, like, Steven Matz, who I was actually, I made a mock trade about the Red Sox getting him swapping Kenley for Matz. I think the Cardinals would much prefer Matt's coming out of the bullpen. He wouldn't, obviously, at the start of the year if Gray is out, but when Gray comes back, you have Gray, then Monty, Lance Lynn at the three, Michaelis at the four, Gibson at the five, with Steven Matz coming out of the bullpen, or maybe you have Matz at the five and Gibson out of the bullpen. I think the rotation looks a lot better with Monty in it than it does with friggin' Steven Matz or Kyle Gibson. That's where I think Monty ends up. I think he ends up back in St. Louis. I think he wants the comfort.
I have a sleeper team for Gumby.
Who?
The Tampa Bay Rays.
the Rays are the ultimate sleeper team. You get desperate enough that you're willing to things. You're willing to do questionable things for work. That's where you go.
Yeah, their back alley move. You know what I mean? Like they're that's some questionable free agents signings.
If you're willing to play in the equivalent of a baseball stadium to the Providence dump, you go to Tampa Bay.
That is where you end up. That is where you end up. You go to the Rays. Awesome. I mean, they showed a greater willingness to spend last offseason when they gave $13 million a year to Zach Eflin. So I mean, would Monty be willing to take less? Because there's no way in hell the Rays gave him 20 plus mil for even a year. Would he be willing to take less to potentially be the next guy that dominates for 15 starts and then misses the rest of the season?
Well, I also thought the report on Monty of, you know, the smaller market comment, I thought that was also kind of shaking ass at Dombrowski and shaking ass at some of these bigger markets to say, hey, listen, call your bluff kind of thing. Like, oh yeah, I'll go to one of these small markets if they pay me. No, he wants to win. He wants to go somewhere and he wants to win.
Which is why I think the Rays make, like, now that Tim's brought it up, the Rays make some sense because they're a smaller market team that is always in a position to win because they don't fucking know how to lose. Yeah. It's so strange. Until it gets to October. I mean, people talked about the Rays, and every year for the last 5 years, myself included, it's been the year that the Rays were going to suck. Like, they just have to. They're so due for a bad year. And then they didn't. And, like, last year's team, like, it's reflected on so negatively because they got swept out by Monty and the Rangers in the wild card round. That team won 99 games last year.
Yeah.
I thought it was, like, 93 or 94. They won 99 games last year. Glasnow missed 2 months last season. Jeffrey Springs only made like three starts. Drew Rasmussen got hurt in May. Like, and they won 99 games. 99.
It's just, I don't know, something in the water. Something in the fucking water down there. I don't get it.
It's garbage.
It's garbage. It's HGH.
HGH.
They're water.
They went to Peyton Manning University.
Tennessee? Anyway, so we'll wrap things up here. I do want to mention this only because it got announced like an hour before we started recording. Mookie Betts is a shortstop now.
Yeah.
Gavin Lux is so Kike Hernandez-esque at short that Mookie Betts, after being named the starting second baseman in November, is now the team's starting shortstop permanently for now, as Dave Roberts put it. So the dude is turning into Seydon Rafaela. The delusions are feeding themselves with the similarities. I will peddle that narrative. I already tweeted it because I'm shameless that he's just trying to be Seti. But that's it. I mean, I can go around the horn and give just any quick thoughts before we wrap this up. But like, I thought that was crazy. I woke up and I'm like, am I still sleeping? Like, there's no way Mookie's a shortstop now.
The guy that was so adamant, I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but was pretty damn adamant about not being a middle infielder anymore in Boston. Yeah, you know, to be a shortstop. I mean, listen, the Dodgers are all their chips, and I think maybe another 18 teams chips are on the board right now for the Dodgers, and I think they can afford the luxury of having Mookie Betts be a shortstop. Blew my mind. I got the alert on my phone. I was like, that's fucking nuts. Yep, nope. It's kind of what makes sense with this whole offseason.
Yeah, seriously. My one thing is I fear, like, it's a physically demanding position. Mookie's not a big dude.
Yeah.
No. It's a risky move. For me, I mean, I think he'll be fine. He takes great care of his body, but like, you know, like I said earlier with Giolito, and this is a much more extreme example because Mookie's really never hurt. But when we're talking about a guy, like, small guys typically don't hold up over time at physically demanding positions. Andrew McCutchen had to move off of center field. Mookie, you know, moved from right field to second base, which is a much less physically demanding position, at least in my opinion, which is not very informed. Because I played neither right field nor second base because I'm fat.
That's fake news.
Okay, whatever. I think the way Mookie, maybe I'm just still thinking about right field at Fenway, which it should be. But anyway,
yeah.
But like, Altuve's held up for the most part, even though he's starting to break down a little bit. He missed 70 games last year. He's playing second base. I don't know. Shortstop is a risky move for me, but I think, you know, if anyone's capable of doing it, it's Mookie Betts. I mean, he's not bad at literally anything. So sad. He should be here still.
He's going to do it. He's going to do it. He's probably going to do it well.
Alexa, play You Should Be Here by Cole Swindell. Tim, you got any thoughts on Mookie at shortstop before we wrap it up here?
Good ball player.
Good. That he is. Some might say great.
Fucking guy, dude.
till the calendar turns to October, then we all tie him for hits in the postseason. Yeah. So before we
Tim's cracking me up.
before we wrap this up, I do want to announce, I didn't mention this at the beginning of the episode, but we did start a Twitch channel. We haven't done anything for it yet. This is going to be something more towards the regular season if we wanted to do, you know, post-game show type stuff. And, you know, further down the road, we have been talking about doing a trade deadline special, you know, down in July at some point. So this is something that's not imminent. Like, we're not going to start doing Twitch streams, you know, at least until the regular season begins. But we do have a Twitch channel. It's the Pesky Report. As is everywhere.
It's just the real sketch.
The real sketch. Free advertising for sketch. But
Tuesday.
Oh my god.
What's going on, brother? We got chicken nuggets in here?
Special teams, special plays, special players.
I wonder what percentage of the people who listen to this episode will know who Sketch is. I mean, if you have TikTok, there's no way you don't. Like, I feel like, Kevin, do you have TikTok?
I do not.
Oh, okay, so if you don't know
who I'm Sketch just laughing is, because I hear Tim's voice and now I'm just fucking cracking up every time he says something. When he just called Mookie Betts a good ball player, that's all his fucking thoughts were on him moving to shortstop. Yeah, good ball player.
Good, thanks, dude. Good ball player.
Thanks for hanging out, Tim.
And a few words. But...
He meant a few words, but the words are not, they could not be any more true than they are. When they...
Oh, that's fucking great.
I'm fucking crying, man. Anyway. So, yeah, go follow us on Twitch. We're going to start trying to find new ways to get content out to, you know, those of you who support us. And again, go to Spotify, follow us there, Apple Podcasts, wherever you listen to your podcast, we are there. Go leave a review, go leave a star rating. Again, if you hate us, let us know. We'll figure out some ways to improve the show so you guys, you know, are willing to give us a 5-star rating. And if you think we're great, let us know that too. It's, you know, never a bad day for dopamine.
It's not you guys, it's me, because I'm a dickhead on Twitter.
I wonder what we'll get some pesky report lore here. I wonder what Joe Jakes' review of this podcast is. I'll leave it there. So again, thank you for listening to episode 331 of the Pesky Report, presented by Beyond the Monster. For Kevin and Tim, I'm Jordan. We'll see you guys next time. Peace out.